Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites AmericanSongwriter.com and Iowa Public Radio. Question number one, which format of classical music is described as an ensemble piece that features a single soloist throughout and usually consists of three movements? Is that called a concerto? Is it a cantata? Is it an oratorio? Or is it D, a suite? So which of those formats of classical music features a single soloist in three movements? And question number two, which award-winning band was originally known as Tom and Jerry? Is it A, Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead? Is it B, the Everly Brothers? Is it C, Simon and Garfunkel? Or is it D, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers? Tom and Jerry, which musical group started out with that band name anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July the 14th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1795, that the French National Convention accepted La Marseillaise as the French national anthem. It was the first national anthem of France. The French national anthem, 1795, today. And it was 30 years ago today, 1993, that the U.S. Postal Service released 29-cent stamps that honored four Broadway musicals. The featured scenes were from My Fair Lady, Porgy and Bess, Showboat, and Oklahoma. 1993, today. And in folk music news, we have this article titled Catching Up with Janisian. This is written by Alana Nash, AARP, the magazine, June-July 2023 issue. Last year, Janisian, 72, racked up her 10th Grammy nomination, 55 years after her first one, for The Light at the End of the Line. She also announced it would be her final album. Question, one of your best-known songs is At 17. How is 72-year-old Janis different from 17-year-old? Answer, I'm a lot braver. The first time I was consciously brave about my work was with At 17, when I sang it with my eyes open. It's such a personal, vulnerable song, and I was waiting for people to laugh at me. It was a huge shock to realize that instead of laughing, they were weeping. Question, with The Light at the End of the Line, you've said, I'm not calling this retiring, it's rewiring. What does that mean? Answer, for me, retiring means I'll sell my catalogs, I'll write books, I'll stop doing so much business, and be able to be more creative. Final question, what drives you? Answer, you can't stop. If you stop, you're dead. The key issue is not a set of numbers, it's what's going on in your heart and your brain. So long as the heart beats and the brain moves forward, you're not old. And in classical music news, the BBC Proms, what it's all about. The world's greatest classical music festival, 14 July to 9 September 2023 at the Royal Albert Hall. This is published in by bbc.co.uk. The BBC Proms is a classical music festival held every summer at the Royal Albert Hall in London, and in recent years has explored new venue spaces through the innovative Proms at series of events. Its aim to bring the best in classical music to the widest possible audience, which remains true to founder conductor Henry Wood's original version in 1895. Whether you are a classical connoisseur or think classical music is not for me, there is surely something for everyone in the 8-week stretch of concerts. Why is it called the Proms? Proms is short for promenade concerts, informal and inexpensive concerts with an opportunity for promenaders, promers, to stand and listen. When did the Proms begin? Henry Wood, who conducted almost every concert for nearly half a century, lifted his baton for the first time on Saturday, 10 August 1895. Even then, prom concerts were not a new idea. They actually started in France in the 1830s and were introduced to the UK shortly afterwards. Whose idea was it? The Proms was the brainchild of Robert Newman, whose ambition was to enable people to enjoy serious music. He was well known for organizing and financing musical events. Sir Henry Wood, founder conductor of the Proms, believed in making the best quality classical music available to the widest possible audience, and that ambition remains central to the BBC Proms today. The Proms celebrated its 125th season in 2019, yet still remains true to its original aim, to present the widest range of music performed to the highest standards to large audiences. 2016 saw 90 years since the BBC took over the Proms, and from the first broadcast concert of 1927, the UK has enjoyed a wide range of both new, well-known, and much dearly loved music from the festival. Born in 1869, Henry Wood had undergone a thorough musical training, and from his teens began to make a name for himself as an organist, accompanist, composer and arranger, vocal coach, and conductor of choirs, orchestras, and amateur opera companies. Newman arranged to meet Wood at Queen's Hall one spring morning in 1894 to talk about this project. "I'm going to run nightly concerts to train the public in easy stages," he explained. "Popular at first, gradually raising the standard until I have created a public for classical and modern music." In February 1895, Newman offered Wood conductorship of a permanent orchestra at Queen's Hall and of the first prom season. The informal atmosphere was encouraged by cheap promenade tickets. Eating, drinking, and smoking were permissible, though patrons were asked to refrain from striking matches during the vocal numbers. The more serious items were confined to the first half, and a major attraction of the shorter second half was the orchestral Grand Fantasia, choice morsels extracted from popular operas. Wood and Newman were keen to introduce audiences to an ever wider range of music. Soda Stereo's Signos introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Every Song Took You on a Musical Odyssey. The rediscovery of Soda Stereo, Argentina's biggest band. The trio's police-inspired sound shot them to Latin megastardom. 40 years later, audiences worldwide are finally tuning in, including Bono and Chris Martin. This is written by Andy Meek, 17th of May, 2023, in The Guardian. Rudy Pensa, the Argentine-born owner of New York Guitar Store, Rudy's music stop, was in a back room polishing merchandise when one of his store's most frequent visitors stopped by. On this particular day in 1988, Carlos Alomar, David Bowie's longtime collaborator, didn't want a new instrument. Instead, he was keen to produce a Latin rock band and needed pointing in the right direction. Pensa retrieved a notebook to find a phone number he'd jotted down for a singer, Gustavo Cerati, who had recently visited the shop and asked Alomar, "Have you ever heard of a band from Argentina called Soda Stereo?" Today, that's a question that would draw a puzzled look from just about any Latino. To ask it in 2023, on the 40th anniversary of this band's public debut, is a little like asking an American or Briton if they knew who the Beatles are. Everybody in the Hispanic market knows about Soda Stereo. Alomar, now 72, says about a band that packs stadiums and arenas across the continent, sometimes with crowds of more than 100,000, an unheard-of level of success for a Latin rock band. Before 1988 was out, Alomar met Cerati along with bassist Zeta Bosio and drummer Charlie Alberti and produced Soda Stereo's fourth album, Doble Vida. Not only did they come out representing their local community in their lyrics, Alomar continues, but the orchestration of the music had exactly the same progressions as all the classic rock and roll bands that you heard all over the radio. This familiarity helped Soda Stereo's success, but the sheer brio and flamboyance of their craft was the real key. Every song took you on a musical odyssey. They were largely unnoticed by English-speaking audiences at the time, a little ironic given that Soda Stereo were Anglophiles and Beatles obsessives. But by the time they broke up in 1997, after more than a decade together, they had sold upwards of 17 million records, and the story might have ended there, but for an internet-fueled insurgence that's added a still-unfolding postscript to the band's story. Thanks to a combination of Spotify, where Soda Stereo's biggest hits have racked up hundreds of millions of streams each, as well as Instagram Stan accounts and YouTube reaction channels, their music is also now reaching an international audience of non-Spanish speakers who had never been exposed to the group all those years ago. Those fans include Coldplay's Chris Martin, who in recent months went so far as to tattoo on one arm the words, Gracias Totales, Cerati's famous words of thanks at Soda Stereo's farewell concert in 1997. Bono also declared himself a fan in an email to Alberti a couple of years ago. Very exciting is how Alberti, now 60, describes the surge in interest. I am still a person who does not believe what I did, so in that respect, I'm easily emotional. For Laura Fromont, a 42-year-old French married mother of two, her experience to Soda Stereo came during the COVID lockdowns with the 1992 song En Remolinos. It immediately moved me somewhere else with a soothing atmosphere, like a mental escape during the awful situation we were all in, she said. In response, she sent a friend in Buenos Aires an emoji with heart eyes. My friend told me something like, "You have to listen to the band of my country. I'm so proud of them." Fromont began working her way through the band's catalog, becoming enough of a fan that she signed her name, now along with 29,000 others from 62 countries, to a petition to make Soda Stereo the first Spanish-language group inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Soda Stereo was the result of three people trying to generate something that at the time was hardly represented even in Argentina, Alberti explains from his home in Buenos Aires.
We tried to talk it over, but the words come out too rough. I know you were trying to give me the best of your love. Beautiful faces from loud empty places, look at the way that we.
The Eagles' Best of My Love introduces our local music news. It's titled, The Eagles Say They've Booked Their Final Tour. Charlotte and Raleigh are on the list. This is published in the Charlotte Observer, July 10, 2023. The Eagles announced on Thursday morning that their upcoming The Long Goodbye will be the band's final tour, and among the 13 initially booked shows is one set for Charlotte. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band, featuring the lineup of Don Henley, Joe Walsh, and Timothy B. Schmidt, with Vince Gill and Deacon Frey, the son of late Eagle Glenn Frey, will perform at Spectrum Theater Center on Tuesday, November the 7th. They'll also play PNC Arena in Raleigh that Thursday, November the 9th. Pre-sale tickets and VIP packages will be sold starting Wednesday, July 12th. The general on-sale period will begin at 10 a.m. Friday, July 14th. The Eagles, who last performed in Charlotte in February 2022 as part of their Hotel California 2022 tour, will be joined for the long goodbye by fellow Hall of Famers Steely Dan. And this will indeed be a long goodbye. The tour is expected to continue into 2025.
I see it, man, but we both see it slipping away. You know we always had each other, baby. I guess that wasn't enough.
So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question Which format of classical music is described as an ensemble piece that features a single soloist throughout and usually consists of three movements? Is that A, a concerto, B, a cantata, C, an oratorio, or D, a suite? Correct answer. Answer A, a concerto. As noted in a June 12, 2020 article published in IPR, Iowa Public Radio, titled Classical Music 101, All About Formats, here are two of the 10 common formats of classical works and well-known examples of each. Cantata is an Italian word that translates in English to sung, or in this case, a piece that is sung. Cantatas are very similar to oratorios, but they more loosely defined and don't have to be religious in nature. They are typically performed on a much smaller scale by a small ensemble in a church setting or something similar. Carmina Burina is a larger-scale, secular, non-religious piece that has shown up in many instances of popular culture and is most recognized by its opening movement, O Fortuna. A concerto is an example piece, an ensemble piece, that features a single soloist throughout and usually consists of three movements. Concertos typically have a large-scale accompaniment, like an orchestra, but many have been written or rearranged to be just piano or something of a similar scale. Though not strictly a concerto feature, concertos often have longer solo sections known as cadenzas. Cadenzas are typically written by the composer, but they are very fluid and can be improvised or even replaced by a different composer's cadenza. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 in C minor is a great example, and this piece has a cadenza in its beautiful second movement. The other eight formats discussed in detail in this article are ballet, mass, opera, chamber, oratorio, sonata, suite, and symphony. These examples only scratch the surface, and there are lots of other genres and even subgenres within these examples to explore. And the answer to our second question, which award-winning band was originally known as Tom and Jerry? Is that A, Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead, B, the Everly Brothers, C, Simon and Garfunkel, or D, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers? Correct answer? That would be answer C, Simon and Garfunkel. As noted in a June 25, 2023 article published in AmericanSongwriter.com titled, Can You Guess What These 10 Bands Were Originally Named? Deciding on a band name is a big deal, and unfortunately, no secret formula exists to help out with the choice. There is no picking the names of a hometown street and a beloved family pet and calling it a day. A brand name requires thought, inspiration, and maybe a few wrong choices before finding the one. Here are 10 bands that understand that better than most. Can you guess what they originally went by? For example, the band Creed was known as Naked Toddler. Simon and Garfunkel were Tom and Jerry. For the Paul Simon R. Garfunkel-led folk duo, the name Simon and Garfunkel seems like the obvious choice, but surprisingly, the name was not their first. The late 1950s saw the young pair assume the name Tom and Jerry, with Garfunkel taking the pseudonym Tom Graf and Simon becoming Jerry Landis. They wouldn't debut as Simon and Garfunkel until 1964. Well, how about the Red Hot Chili Peppers? They were known as Tony Flo and the Miraculously Majestic Masters of Mayhem. And then Earth, Wind, and Fire? They were known as the Salty Peppers. How about the Goo Goo Dolls? They were known as the Sex Maggots. How about Coldplay? It was known as Starfish. How about Pearl Jam? They were known as Mookie Blaylock. How about Black Sabbath? They were known as the Polka Hulk Blues Band. How about Green Day? They were known as Sweet Children. And finally, last but not least, how about Radiohead? They were known on a Friday. The story goes that when Radiohead first formed, the members were still in school and could only hold band rehearsals on Fridays. Hence, their original band name, On a Friday. They used the name well into their first several gigs, but when EMI came a-callin', a new name was in order, and Radiohead emerged. And the story behind Coldplay's Starfish name, when that band that would become Coldplay formed, they were using the name Big Fat Noises as a placeholder. By the time their first show together rolled around, they panicked and chose to go by the name Starfish. The aquatic moniker was short-lived before they landed on Coldplay only weeks later. And finally, the backstory to Pearl Jam's Mookie Blaylock. Before there was Pearl Jam, there was Mookie Blaylock, a young grunge band named after the New Jersey Nets player, Mookie Blaylock. It was under that name that the band played their first gigs until they were eventually signed to Epic Records and found themselves in need of a new name. Their alias became Pearl Jam. So, bringing it back to a local level, let's close out today's program with the other act that's performing locally in the Eagles' final long goodbye tour, Steely Dan, with their acknowledgement to aging called Hey 19. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. This program is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service.